Hello and welcome back to today's episode of Did Kristen Prepare for the Podcast? I'm your host, Chris, and no, I'm just kidding. well, where am I? But this is episode 8 of the Book Wars Pod. I really am Chris, and I'm here with Kate and Kristen, who may or may not have prepared for the podcast. I don't know. Keeks, want to give us an update?
I know Kate prepared. Kate always prepares. I didn't pick an Easter egg, so as usual, you guys were like, pick an Easter egg, and I was like, guess what, guys? I didn't pick one. So we'll see if I either come up with one. Yeah, I might come up with one during the pod, or I could just say Hondo wasn't in the book, was my favorite Easter egg, but we'll see. I can riff about Hondo for months, so.
That's true. That's a different podcast, though.
Yeah, Hondo Is Talk. It? Hondo Talk.
Yeah.
That's me. It's me and Chris's beer podcast. Yeah, me and Chris's beer podcast. Half of it is Hondo Talk and half of it's beer. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, that's actually, like, though.
That's Chris's least favorite thing, honestly.
Speaking of our beer podcast, what's everyone... Well, I don't know. Is anyone drinking?
I'm drinking. It's 11 a.m. here. I am drinking right now because I don't have any other cold beverages in my refrigerator that aren't beer, and I really wanted a cold beverage, so...
I'm out of LaCroix.
Oh my god.
I thought I bought two boxes, but I only bought one. And I drank all of that this week. So yeah, I'm drinking Rainier. It's fine. I have like a camping discussion at a brewery at like 1 PM anyway, so I might as well just like get a little primed and ready for that. Get a little hazy and
primed.
There you go. Nice.
Oh my god. I'm just chugging tea right now because I'm going to fall asleep during this recording.
Good job, Kate.
I forgot to get tea. After we finish this intro, I might pause and get tea.
Oh my god, you people and your non-babies.
For the moment, I'm not drinking anything.
Okay.
So tired.
Because it's 2 o'clock, but mostly because we are out of beer.
That's not a good spot to be in, as far as I'm concerned.
That's nothing. Nothing stops you from going for something harder. We've got plenty of liquor.
Who wants to drink whiskey at 2 o'clock? I mean, I've done that before, but...
Yeah, I was about to say, we've all done that.
I'm trying not to do it alone on the weekend.
Without saying Robert Stone Keeks.
Just what we need.
All right, anyway. We're so off track. But anyway, this is the Book Wars Podcast. We are here to... wrap up our discussion on Bloodline by Claudia Gray. I think it's safe to say that we've all really, really enjoyed this book.
Super Absolutely. Much a lot. Yeah. I think, you know, it's funny because we were all talking about how looking forward to this book we were, how much we were all looking forward to reading this book. There we go, words. And I think it pretty much lived up to our expectations. I mean, we've talked... Me and Kate especially have touched a little bit on what we would have liked more of, I think, in previous episodes. But I mean, I think on the whole, Claudia Gray really delivered here with the book and telling us more about Leia.
One thing that really struck me is listeners may have noted, this is not my first time reading the book. I read it a few months back, and so I was really interested to see if like the second reading changed my view at all. And I was kind of surprised to see that it really didn't. I didn't see any of the twists coming, all the plot twists and characterizations weren't telegraphed. And I mean that not in a none of this made sense and was built up to in any way. I mean it as in shit was really well done, and it was just very authentic character development and surprising twists and stuff that I don't know. It felt like it was a very good read the second time around, which was very exciting for me.
Right, it still felt fresh for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
All right, so now that we've gone through the seamless transition of me getting tea and you not knowing about it from the beauty of editing, we can jump right in. One question that we've asked before, both about Bloodline and also about Rebel Rising before it, is does this book change your view of Leia? And specifically, I think kind of the seminal moment of this book is the reveal of Darth Vader being Leia's father. And we what we wanted to talk a little bit about is, do you all think that she was right not to tell anybody about Vader?
I don't. I think. Okay, I think the more that I've thought about what, Kate?
We're gonna debate. Go.
Oh, I was just gonna say the more that I've thought about this, the more I'm like, when would have been an opportune time to mention it? Like, what would? I don't even know when she would have said it. Like, right when she found out, or. Especially because, like, right when she found out, it would have been even fresher. All the Vader hate would have been even fresher. Or do we think that that was, like, magnified by, like, the time? But I'm like, I don't know that she was totally justified in not saying anything. I think she probably would have felt better as well had she said something. But, I mean, like, the blow up of that happening and... everybody's reaction to it just kind of shows that she was at least correct in her thinking that it would not be okay. Whether or not that makes it right, I don't know, but I was like, well, duh, she was at least correct in thinking that it was not a good thing for people to know.
Right. I think my thing with it is that, I think it's bearish a little bit, but especially Ty Lin Gar, who go to her and kind of say, well, we were your friends in the Senate, why didn't you at least tell us? And I think they were right about that, you know, even if she didn't want to, like, do a whole big press conference to tell everybody that she was the spawn of Satan. I do think that she was wrong in keeping it from a lot of people who were actually really close to her, and I definitely think she was wrong not to tell Ben about it earlier in his life, and who knows if he would have turned to the dark side earlier, or, you know, turned at all. I guess it kind of remains to be seen what that moment was like for him, and maybe we'll find out in The Last Jedi in December. But yeah, it's a lot of history that she kept really close to the vest, and I don't think he necessarily... I understand why she felt like she had to do that, but I don't think it was necessarily the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, I kind of agree with you both. I'm going to do the, you know, perfect waffling thing. But, like, I agree with Kristen. Like, I just don't know when would have ever been an okay time for her to go public with it. And so, like, because, like, obviously, like, she found out right after the Battle of Endor, but, like, as we get a little bit of from this, and as we, like, find out much more about in the Aftermath series by Chuck Wendig, which we'll read later, like, the Battle of Endor did not end the war. Like, there was still, like, some shit going down. And so, like, that would have been a really destabilizing thing for, like, right as the Rebellion had, like, legitimized itself and, like, risen up to be the actual government, like, to say that one of the heroes is actually, like a step removed from being pure evil. So couldn't have really said it then. You know, we don't really know as much about the intervening years between, like, say, like the Battle of Jakku and when, you know, this book takes place. So maybe there was a calm time when Leia could have, you know, relied on the public persona of Mon Mothma to hold things together and take that opportunity to bow out. But I don't see a scenario in which case Leia could have come public and remained in public life.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that was so much of a part of her identity and really, like, what she wanted to do, right? So when she was done fighting in the war, there was no question whether or not she was going to go back to the Senate. And I think she wouldn't have really known what to do, right? And, you know, she always alludes to that she would have gone and ran around the galaxy with Han, but I think we all kind of know that that would have kind of fizzled out in a way that probably would not have been great for her, just because of her own ambitions. But I think my other point was going to be, I think we can, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I think we can all agree that she should have told Ben sooner. But that's one of those,
yeah.
I'm
so interested to see how they handle the relationship between Leia and Ben in episode 8. Or I hope they do handle it. I swear to God, if they were going to, like, leave that one for episode 9 and now it's, oh, Jesus. Yeah. But I hope they do handle it.
Ugh.
Because,
I don't even talk about
it. I agree. when she was like talking about how she hadn't, how like Ben didn't even know, I was like, well, that seems like an oversight.
Yeah, it's like well, and how old was Ben in this book?
Well, 20. this was 28 years after Endor.
20. Okay, so he's like
so no one knows.
27.
He was that old? 26,
27. 26.
Jesus yeah. Christ! I thought he was younger than
that. Well, because Kylo Ren is 30.
Oh, that's fair.
So Kylo Ren was born 4 years after the Battle of Endor.
Right. Oh, God, okay.
Because he's 30 in Force Awakens, which is 34. Oh, no. Sorry. I'm wrong.
I didn't think he was that old in Force Awakens.
I thought he was, 32 or something.
He was actually born pretty quickly after the Battle of Endor. So he would have been... He'd be 26, 27, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, yeah. That's like...
So
yeah,
he's definitely old enough to be... process this information.
I was gonna shit the bed on that one. I mean, I think we knew that anyway, but like, fuck. But the other thing that I was
also just from everything we know about the Force and like training to be a Jedi, it seems like that is information that it would probably be better to have when you're younger and don't know how to be angry about it.
Right. I mean, like, it's like, so funny because
fear leads to anger.
It's literally the same thing that happened with Luke, right? It's like no one's gonna tell him who his father is. Great.
Ben, yeah. Why didn't you tell me?
Is Darth Vader my father? I'm just gonna die instead. Good idea, Yoda. Why would you? Why would you even answer that? Right.
Running away from my problems.
Yeah. No, but what I was gonna say was, it's funny because it's very like. It's very, like, Montague and Capulet, now that I'm, like, thinking about it. Just, like, the way that things probably would have played out. It's like everybody would have just ended up dead, if anything. At least, in my opinion, it's like, I don't know. It just had, like, a very, like, Shakespearean twist to it that, like, stood out to me more in this book than it did in other books, just because of the way that everybody reacted to her father being Vader. But that's
oh yeah, so definitely. Star Wars it's very... is nothing if not Shakespearean, honestly. Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, we talked a little bit last episode about destiny and the will of the Force. Like, it's very, like, you know, obviously it's not a star-crossed lovers situation, but it's very, like, destiny-driven. It's very, like, this is the situation in the galaxy, and, you know, obviously, you know, the movie is the main plot driver in this, and, like, prepping for the movie, and so that creates a certain amount of destiny, but it's very much, like, this is the outcome that we're going to arrive at, and there's nothing you can do to change that.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, just kind of getting back to the original question, does the book change your view of Leia? One thing that it did do for me is kind of give... I don't know, this is going to come off as very negative, and I don't mean it as negative, because she's a human being with hopes and dreams, but it kind of gives you a view of Leia's selfishness isn't the right word, but her force of personality for shaping what she wants in addition to what is necessarily the right choice.
Right.
Because like you have like, because we talked about like probably the only way that she ever could have come public with this was to not be in public life. And on the one hand, like she talks a lot about like her sense of duty and her duty to the galaxy and that kind of being her connection to the Force. But on the other hand, it's also very clear from her interactions with Han and talking about their different paths and their different lives that she wants to be in the public eye. Like, this is something that she wants to do, and she feels, like, deep down, even though she may hate the day-to-day of it, deep down she feels like this is her calling and it's something that she needs to do. And, like, I feel like you can't have that sense of duty without a certain amount of self-importance. And I feel like that definitely contributed to the decision to keep this a secret.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's totally analogous, honestly, to, you know, there are a lot of politicians who, you know, they say that they feel called to this, right? They say, like, you know, a lot of them are just like, this is what God called me to do sort of thing. And I think that's similar for her.
Leia is Ted Cruz.
Oh, my God.
Please,
I'm editing that out.
Oh, my God.
I don't want that ever recorded again, or heard again.
Yep.
Well, and I think that it's like this interesting dichotomy, right? It's like now I sound self-important, but I think about like Anytime any of my younger friends have asked me for career advice, I've been like, a great question to ask yourself is what can't you not do? And Kate's like, skin is crawling because of the construction of that. But I think like this is something for Leia, like she can't not do this. Like whenever she finds herself outside of the public eye, it's like she ends up right back in it, right? I mean, it's like when Maz says that to Han, it's like, look at you, you're like right back in it or whatever she says. But I think it's like part of it is, yes, she feels a sense of duty, but then I think the other part of it is like just her personality. She's like, if I wasn't doing this in this way, I'd be doing something else that's similar to this anyway. I think it's just something that she's like drawn to without like, you know, she has some control over it, I guess, but it's like every time she's tried to get out of it, it's come right back to her. So I think that's part of it,
too. I think
that's
completely true.
Yeah.
I think that's completely true, and especially because, I mean, what else could she imagine doing, honestly, growing up how she grew up with the parents that she grew up with doing what she did, you know? There's never been a part of her life where that she could separate from politics, ever.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that really struck me, so as you may have seen on Twitter, Kate and I rewatched parts of Force Awakens last night. Basically the parts that had Leia and Han in them.
Did you tweet that from our account, or did you tweet that from your accounts? I didn't even look.
Pretty sure the Book Wars Pod.
Oh, cool. I'm sorry, I didn't check this morning.
If we didn't, then you should totally follow at Lusitania and at Chris Sedor on Twitter to keep up with us.
Yeah, those are tagged in the at Book Wars Pod.
They are in our bio.
There we go. Yep. Words. It's still early here, man. I've only had one cup of coffee, and I'm already on to beer. It's like my brain's firing on even fewer cylinders than usual.
Oh my gosh.
But one thing that did really strike us was that you kind of do get the sense, or you obviously like get the sense watching Force Awakens that Leia is, you know, much older and quote-unquote wiser, but also she's just much harder. She's, like, you can tell that, like, in addition to all the shit that she saw early in her life, and, like, obviously there was a lot of it, she's seen some shit. She's not the same person with the same positive view as she was in Return of the Jedi. And, like, she's not the person who would go, like, jump on a speeder bike and, like, run into the forest anymore because, like, she's too old for that shit, both, like, physically, obviously, but also emotionally.
Yeah, I think we definitely see that too in the last scene of the book where she's like starting, you know, the rebel group, and she's just like,
yeah.
All right, I need like able-bodied soldiers pretty much, like who's in? I'm going to lead this from behind a desk and give direction. I wish I could be out on the front lines, but also like fuck that.
Yeah, I was really struck at the end of the book when she's, you know, she's looking at Joff and she sees all that young idealism and she's kind of like, remember when I used to be like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And she also kind of gets that sense from Castor Foe when, like, he's so idealistic about the Empire. Obviously, they didn't have the same ideals. But she says, like, I remember being young and idealistic instead of being jaded now. And then, obviously, you see, like, the ultimate, you know, extinguishing of his idealism, and that kind of just, to me, was like a very important moment where she's like, I have no power to stop this. Like, there's nothing I can do about this. And that was like very potent as a moment when the last little bit of idealism and innocence in Leia died.
Ugh, that's such a heartbreaking scene. Oh my god. Yeah, this book just murdered me.
Every single scene in Star Wars is so sad. Anyway, I'm just saying.
In any of the movies, TV shows, or books,
is what Pete's saying. Like, and I can't even watch any of the happy scenes from the original trilogies anymore. Like, I can't even be happy during them because I'm like, everything is a disaster.
Yeah,
because
you know
it's
all
later. Like, plus.
Speaking of,
go ahead, Kate.
Oh my gosh. No, just speaking of happy things to get, you know, hashtag ruined, we were definitely going over last night the reunion scene between Han and Leia and them talking at the Resistance base, and then we watched the bit where Han dies, and I still have to hide her under a blanket every time I watch it because I hate it. And I was telling Chris, and I think I've said this a little bit on some of our previous episodes on Bloodline. You can easily, just from watching the movie and not reading the book, draw the conclusion that they, again, had a really rocky marriage. You know, that bit right before Han hops on the Falcon to go rescue Rey, you know, they have that little banter conversation that, you know, it wasn't all bad, was it? You know, some of it was pretty good. But no, it seems like, honestly, a lot of their marriage is really good, and you only get that in the book. Like, if I hadn't read this, I would have just been, like, just, like, you know, sitting around for the rest of my days being like, God, they must have had a horrible marriage. No, they really didn't! Like, and thank God, because, you know, I just want my space parents to be happy, you know, for whatever amount of time they had to be happy, because Star Wars womp womp.
Yeah.
No, totally. And I know we talked a little bit about that in previous episodes between Han and Leia, but it, particularly the ending of that book, when you see them together, the ending of Bloodline, when you see Han rescue Leia on Sabensko, and then them together on Hazeem Prime. And you do, you just see this marriage that, like, it's not perfect. Like, honestly, they can't spend that much time together because, like, one of them goes stir crazy. But, like,
or both of them,
they love each other,
crazy.
And that's enough.
Sorry, I'm always like, both of them are crazy.
Yeah. Oh, crazy, no, they too. Are. But, yeah, no, and it's just,
yeah.
It's nice. It's a nice view of, like, you don't get a lot of normal relationships in Star Wars because you have, like, Padme and Anakin, which, oof. And then you also have, like...
Can you do that again? That was really good. That's exactly that how excellent. Everybody feels. Oof.
Yep. And then you, like, have, like, obviously, like, the weird love triangle in the original trilogy, which is super weird when you realize that, like, Luke and Leia are sisters, but, like,
our sisters. Have,
they're sisters, but sorry, they're siblings. But
yeah, literally the only normal, like, steady relationship we have in Star Wars is Kanan and Hera from Rebels, and they're like, and Dave Filoni won't even tell us if they're actually canon or not.
Right?
We're not. But no. But then you do right have. Now.
Oh my God.
You do have Han and Leia though, who, like, obviously they're not normal. Like, they spend most of their time apart. Like, they're a galactic power couple because, like, he's, like, this racing mogul and, like, former smuggler, and she is obviously Princess Leia of the Galactic Senate and the Resistance and the Rebellion, but, like, there's something, like, at its core very, like, deep and normal about them. Like, very just, like, day-to-day, how, like, these happy moments are when they are at home eating food, talking over dinner.
Oh, that's so cute. And, you know, and another thing is, when we were watching those bits of Force Awakens. What?
Nothing. I just did a big sneeze. I tried to sneeze not into the mic, and then I said, excuse me, because I can't not. Continue.
The other thing I wanted to say was, when Chris and I were watching Force Awakens, there's that bit when they're talking at the Resistance headquarters, and they're kind of bantering, they're kind of bickering, you know, she's, you know, when Leia's like, don't do that, and he's like, and Han's like, what? He says, don't do anything. And I know, and again, you can, like, kind of grab from that they kind of had a rocky marriage, but as you can very clearly see in Bloodline, bantering is just how they talk. They've never, you know, Leia says they've never grown out of bickering. But there's something endearing about that, you know, that, like, they're both the only two people on the planet who can stand each other, kind of, sort of thing, you know, when they're both being their true selves, which is just, you know, Chris will tell you that, we're married, all we do all day is just kind of, like, banter and just, like, make lots of sassy comments and things like that. That's, like, how marriage is. It's super real, and it just kind of made that scene, like, much more adorable for me, you know? It's, like, seeing them like that. They're that familiar with each other that they can... That's how they talk to each other. And it's a... Like, I don't think it's in a mean way. I don't think they're putting each other down or anything like that, but that's how they communicate, and that's always been their shorthand.
Low-key, one of my favorite moments in Force Awakens is that scene that you were exactly talking about, Kate, but the next line, where it's like, don't do anything. When did that ever get us anything? And don't say the Death Star. It's just, it's so perfect. They've had this exact fight over and over again for 30 years, and they know exactly what each other's retorts are, and it's just, it's marriage, you know?
Yep, totally. Totally marriage.
I can totally say that what Kate is saying about her and Chris is exactly correct, being on several forms of communication with them on a daily basis. And I know in my heart that's only like maybe 5% of what it would be if I was there in person. So that is horrifying.
Accurate.
First of all. But yeah, now I almost rewatched The Force Awakens last night, but I was very busy watching reruns of Mythbusters that I hadn't seen before. So I realized Mythbusters was on Hulu last night, and I was like, well, I was going to do something. And speaking of that, in between Mythbusters, I read our Scorched little short story at the end of, I think most editions of Bloodline.
It's just at the end of the paperback edition.
Oh, yes. It was in my Kindle version too. That's what I mean. I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, this is one of the more promoted short stories. A lot of them are just in, like, there's like a Star Wars Insider magazine that has a lot of these short stories in it, and that you have to pay for, which I do not have a subscription to. But StarWars.com actually promoted this one as like a free story. And also, I just saw that it is in, like, Del Rey, the publishing house behind all of the adult Star Wars novels, just released, like, a sampler for 2017, and it includes, like, some, like, excerpts from novels, and also some short stories, and Scorched is in there. So, like, this is one of the more promoted short stories that they've released.
Yeah, we'll tweet it out again.
I was going to say, it is available, so we'll make sure we tweet that out before we release this episode. Also, Chris, just never say adult Star Wars novels again, please.
The YA ones are published by a different house, the only thing I meant.
But I know what you meant, that's not what I meant.
Well, actually, Kristen...
I know what you meant. I just don't want people to think that we're talking about Star Wars porn books, because they also exist, and that's not what we're talking about.
Wait, are we talking about fan fiction? Because I can give you some really good porn recommendations.
Please stop, Kate.
Nope.
We're not talking about porn fan fiction, and we're not talking about Kinara. Anyway, we're talking about Scorched by Delia S. Dawson. Delilah. Sorry, Delilah Dawson. We'll tag you too and beg for your retweets because we're hoes. we are.
kind of amazing.
But I don't know. So, spoiler alert, like there is on this whole entire podcast, but did you guys realize it was Han like the whole time? The other.
Yes.
The double A-wing or whatever it was.
100%.
I'm a moron when I read, so I only got it like 3/4 of the way through.
Same, Chris.
I only got it when he said used to have a hell of a co-pilot.
Yes. Yes.
Aww. That's cute.
I was weirded out that like his A-wing was like mirrored though. I was like, why? That's not very Han-like. It's very confusing.
Well, that's how I knew it was Han, because I was thinking about the mirror bright.
Okay, that's fair, but, like, I made that connection, too, but didn't think it was Han because of that. But, because I was just, like, of course, like, I don't know, I was just thinking that the Millennium Falcon, it's not beautiful. I mean,
it's a rust bucket, yes.
It is quite the rust bucket, indeed. The garbage will do. Sorry. No, I'm
also, I really want the book that tells us what the hell happened to the Millennium Falcon. It might be Empire's End. I have not read Empire's End yet, but
I want it too. Just saying.
I want to know how Han lost the Millennium Falcon, because it's like alluded to in this that like no ship's ever been good enough for Han since the Millennium Falcon. Which like why would it? But
I also like want to know how he won it from Lando. Really, I also want to know how he won it from Lando originally.
Because it was totally a Spock tournament.
Well, I know that, but, like, I want the backstory of that.
I mean, I feel like that's probably what we're going to get in the Han Solo movie, if it ever comes out.
I hope so. I hope it's not bad.
Like that's probably going to happen.
I hope it's not bad. Whatever. We're going to eat it up and debate it and do exactly what we're doing now to it. So
I mean, as somebody really who matter. Watches the prequels at least once a year, it really doesn't matter what quality it is.
It's so true. We, like, watch the prequels more than once a year now. I'm, like, rewatching the Clone Wars, and all it's making me want to do is watch the prequels again, and I'm like, oh, God, I should not. Yeah. So, speaking of Shakespeare, how Shakespearean was it that Greer was like, it can't be Bloodburn, I don't have that? And we all know she obviously has Bloodburn.
First time I read Scorched, I read it before I read Bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, like, the significance of that line totally went over my head, and I just, like, I was so mad.
Did you know about Bloodburn before that, though?
No.
Okay.
So, no, like, Bloodline
that,
is...
That makes sense that if you didn't know what Bloodburn was, that line would go over your head.
Yeah, Bloodline is the first book that's canon now that has introduced Bloodburn.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, because I guess that was... just because we didn't read it first doesn't mean right. It didn't come out first.
Right, but Beth Rivas and Claudia Gray definitely talk to each other, which is awesome.
I know. Ladies, oh, it's ladies great. Speaking to ladies about Star Wars.
Hell yes.
Dream.
But yeah, I don't know. One thing that I loved about Scorched that I also loved about Bloodline was just Star Wars is like, obviously it's about the main characters, but you do get these really vivid side characters who, like, become cult favorites, and, like, you got that in the movies. Like, Grand Moff Tarkin is, like, a super famous villain, and, like, until the Clone Wars and Rebels came out, he was on screen for approximately, like, 20 minutes of screen time in the entire two trilogies, basically.
Obviously same with Boba Fett. he had, like, zero lines.
Yeah, he's, like, two lines. He says he's no good to me dead. That's his only fucking line.
Yep.
And Mon Mothma on screen for basically just telling you about the Bothans, and that's it. But she, again, it's just this cult favorite who now obviously is like a massive hero in Rebels and in Rogue One.
Totally. Wait, guys, can I have an aside?
Yes.
Because that's this
Depends
whole podcast.
On what it's
but
about,
wait,
but continue.
Do you want to know my favorite fun fact about Peter Cushing?
Yes.
In relation to Star Wars, so when the movie came out in Britain. You know, obviously no one had ever heard of George Lucas or any of these kid actors who played the main trio. So Peter Cushing actually got top billing on the movie poster.
Oh,
and it was just like his face on the movie poster. And he's on screen, like Chris said, for like a minute. And he's just like on every single movie poster. And it's just like Star Wars with Peter Cushing. And then everyone else is like, yeah, and these people. And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah,
it's so funny to go back and watch and see just how incapable they were of marketing Star Wars correctly and how successful it was anyway.
Amazing. Anyway, yeah,
it's
just
like really good viral marketing back in 77.
Yes.
Wow.
Anyway,
wow, I knew that first.
Ago.
Woo! One in a row. There we go. Chris knew it. He
but
just,
yeah, so
I didn't give
anyway,
a
just to wrap up my thought, Greer, I think, is a great example of a character that, like, obviously isn't a main character, but has just this rich backstory that makes us want to know more about her and, like, make us care about her and want to see her in the movies or some of the, I mean, I don't know what, we wouldn't see her in Rebels or anything. She'd be too young, but, like,
she'd be not born.
If she showed up anywhere, me and Kate would have a fucking conniption fit, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, me and Kate were watching Force Awakens yesterday, and, like, we don't know if she's still alive or when Force Awakens comes, but there's a few people that she could be, like, just, like, as uncredited.
That's true. I'll have to look.
Yeah.
Our other favorite possible cameo was in the scene where Hosnian Prime gets destroyed, and, like, you see Kor, like, being destroyed, like, looking at the sky as it's about to blow her up. There is a furry, kind of feline-looking character standing next to her, which is also completely... Well, we didn't look that hard, but we looked on the internet to see if there was, like, any attribution to this character, but we're basically making it our headcanon that it was Verish Vickley.
Oh, yeah, probably, though. Actually, it's very likely. That's so funny that you. I didn't realize that your point was about Greer. That makes total sense. But I'm all for Greer's ex-boyfriend and how much she hates him. It's giving me lifeblood because,
Oh my God,
it
yes.
reminded me so much of Kate. It was just making me laugh. I was like, oh my God,
Oh my God.
this is how Kate talks about people who have wronged her in the past.
You're not wrong about
I know
that. If I
that.
were in Star Wars, I would be from Primartha and I would just be angry all the time.
Yeah, that's accurate.
You could
With my
not
leather jacket and my
glass
space
a port in a
motorcycle
storm.
and what?
You could not finish a glass of port in a storm.
Oh,
Oh, she couldn't. Sorry, Kate. Maybe
I know.
if,
You would
if
be like
maybe if she
Joff.
was
I feel like
trained.
my brain is exploding.
Wow, okay, wow. Just kick me right down to the bottom rung of the ladder. I see how it is.
Kate, I'm gonna use that same intro so that you stop talking, that I used 2 weeks ago. Anyway, do we have anything else to say about do we have anything else to say about Scorched before we move on to some of our Twitter shout outs and questions and comments?
Well, we can do both at the same time because we did get a question that was related to Greer.
So true.
We did.
Yes.
Yes, we got, I think this was our first listener question that we got from at Avenger at Heart. Alex Hall, I believe, is your name on Twitter.
Hi, Alex.
So, Alex, thank you very much for listening and for submitting questions. We are so grateful.
Yeah,
Um, and
you're the only one who has not to call us out, but you're the only one that we don't know IRL that has been asking us questions. So we totally appreciate that and fangirled about it. So
yeah.
just know you're fangirled about.
Exactly. But yeah, so Alex asked, do you feel like Leia misses the freedom of the rebellion? The Senate restricts her every move, politically preventing her from doing good. And yes, I think yes.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. I think I think she kind of says that. I think when she's waxing nostalgic about the rebellion, at certain points in the book, she's saying, of course it was at the time what seemed like really amazing adventures were actually, horrible and she could have died and they were terrifying and scarring emotionally and, actually. But I think she really kind of almost waxes nostalgic about it. It's like when really proud veterans are swapping war stories and trying to one-up each other. I think that's how she kind of looks back on it.
Yeah, and one thing that really struck me getting this question and also reading Scorched after and learning about Greer was when this question really made me think back to it's like right after Leia is asked to run for first senator to be the populist candidate for first senator, and she's basically talking with Greer and being like, but I want to resign, I want to leave, screw all this. And Greer is like, but you would be such a great first senator. And Leia is basically like, if you were in my position, what would you do? And Greer is, and obviously Leia knows about Greer's Bloodburn and knows that Greer has basically faced the same choice and specifically says excitement and freedom versus duty and purpose and doing what you want for however long you have the possibility to do it versus doing the most good you can for other people, for the galaxy. So in Leia's case, it's being a politician and running for first senator. In Greer's case, it was not flying anymore and finding another way for her to contribute to the galaxy. And Greer was like, I went with like I told Princess like I pr told Princess Leia duty, and it's the and like that I would have gone with duty, and that's the only time I've ever lied to her. And so you get this sense that Greer definitely regrets not basically not just going out with a blaze of glory.
Yeah, totally. I think. Oh, Geeks, you go.
Oh, I was just gonna say, and I think that obviously after reading Scorched, we're like, duh, of course she cares more about flying than she did about anything else. That's obviously the most animated and the most Greer we've ever seen her. That's definitely her truest self. But I mean, I think it was probably one of those things where she goes, that was the first time I've ever lied to Le like the first and only time I've ever lied to Leia. But it's probably also one of those things where she wishes that was true of herself because she's physically limited now in her ability to do what she feels like she was really called to do.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I was just going to say, I think it's really interesting that Gray introduced Greer to the canning just because I think we've talked before about how she's almost like a surrogate child for Han and Leia, but she's also just kind of like this projection of essentially Leia's younger self in essence. Again, she's facing a lot of the same conflicts that Leia has. She has that same fiery spirit, and I think it's really interesting just putting basically what she did was she put our younger vision of Leia in the movies, which of course is who people are most familiar with, up against the older version of herself. And I thought that was not only did she make a like really incredible character in Greer, but I also thought that was just really effective narratively.
Absolutely. And to bring it back to Leia, so like Greer clearly does regret making this choice of duty and purpose. Like maybe it was the right choice, but she regrets it. And I feel like Leia feels the same way, at least at many levels. Like maybe not at every level because we talked, not 20 minutes ago about how, at a certain level, Leia does feel born to do this and like feels like it is the right thing for her to go with her duty. But like there is that sacrifice between excitement and freedom, as she had during the rebellion, versus duty and purpose, which is what she has in the Senate. And like, I do feel like I do think she misses the freedom of the rebellion. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and for Greer, just to tie up that end, it's like, it's you, not to poop on you, Chris, but you were like, she regrets her choice. I mean, we learned she didn't really have a choice. It's like, either stay a pilot and die, or stop being a pilot. It's like, that's pretty much the choices that she was left with. And it's like, is that really a choice? And plus, we don't get like the background, like, does Greer have parents who are forcing her to not fly because she's not even that old, et cetera, et cetera.
We do actually. She and Joff are on Pamartha, however it's pronounced. She talks about how like normally she would like go see her parents, but she hasn't been back since she like stopped flying because she doesn't want to like face
Oh.
all these questions about why she's not flying.
Doi, sorry. Yes, that's exactly correct. I remember
However,
things.
I do, however, your point is very correct in that like we say like she made the wrong choice. She didn't really have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably like she's alluded at least a few times, especially in the short story, that she would like rather die flying. But I think the blood burn made it so that like it wouldn't be like a noble thing. It wouldn't be like doing something daring. It would be looked at kind of as doing something stupid. Like if she passed out in flight from blood burn, I feel like that she has, she's got a lot of pride in herself and her abilities, and I think that she wouldn't have let that be her downfall is really part of it.
Well, I think that's a question for her. I think that, especially at the end of Bloodline when she decides to join the Resistance, is she making a brave decision for herself by, quitting racing, or is that actually being cowardly? Is that just her showing her fear of death? That kind of thing. I think it's an open question for
Thanks, Kate. No, I'm serious.
Cool. So we
Like,
have a few more.
I was just gonna say, like, Kate's like, it's a book. Let it breathe. You're right, Kate. Great point.
Yes. So we had a few more listener comments that, again, we really appreciate the listener comments. The first one was from @RealBabyBird, who pointed out that the Alderaanian lullaby from Leia's music box about the mirror bright of the moon fits into the melody of Once Upon a December from the Disney movie Anastasia. Dis no,
Excuse
sorry,
you. Wait,
DreamWorks.
wait,
Sorry,
wait, wait.
sorry,
No,
sorry,
no, no,
sorry,
no,
sorry.
no. No, no. Christopher, this is my pet peeve. Anastasia is not a goddamn Disney movie, and everyone thinks it is.
No.
It is a DreamWorks movie.
I thought it was a
Disney
Disney
would never
movie
have allowed that
too.
scary ass shit on the screen back in 1990, whatever the hell.
All right, go ahead, Kate, talk about it. You obviously have a lot of feelings about Anastasia. Me and Chris will shut up.
It's just a good movie. And it doesn't get enough credit, okay? It's all. But I totally did. Oh my god, Jesus. Okay, these two monsters haven't seen Anastasia recently because they're monsters. And so we got this comment. They were like, "Oh, huh, we don't know if that's actually true. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I had to, like, go pull up the lyrics because I was, like, at work and I didn't have the book on me, obviously. And I just, like, and just, like, singing to myself in my office. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the greatest discovery of all time. And I'm like, wait, guys, Miranda's totally right about this. And they're like, cool story, bro. And I'm like, all right, whatever.
Miranda's, like, one of the best, biggest Star Wars nerds I know. So give @RealBabyBird a follow. I am so serious. You will not be disappointed.
Okay. That's the bad answer now. Go on.
But anyway, the second listener comment that we got was from @ArlenTot.
What's up, Rob? Thank you for listening. Sorry, yeah, he's a bandy, so gotta shout him out.
Hey.
This was like over a series of tweets, so I'm not gonna read it word for word, but we'll retweet it. But basically, it was the point that Caster Foe and the pronunciation is that Caster, like the C-A-S-T-E-R, the beginning of Caster Foe's name, is pronounced the same way as Caster, who like is a constellation, who is one of the twins, who is literally in space. And so here, Caster Foe is a foe to one of the space twins. And that is like the greatest like reasoning out that I've ever heard. And I just hope to God it's true.
Claudia Gray, tweet at us. Tell us whether or not it's real.
Yeah.
We're going to tweet at you until you...
Please tell us if this was your reasoning.
We need to know. Just to clear up a little bit what Chris was saying, Castor and Pollux were twins from Greek mythology. They were actually the brothers of Helen of Troy, and they're now... they make up the Gemini constellation, and they're the reason, of course, why the Gemini astrological sign is twins.
Oh, I totally didn't even know that.
And is so extra. Anyway, I didn't say that. Don't at me, Geminis. I'm afraid of you.
I'm a Gemini. Watch yourself.
Oh my God, stop.
You better watch yourself.
I'm afraid of all Geminis. Shout out to Bailey. She's a Gemini, right? Or is she a Sagittarius? Someone help.
No, she's absolutely Gemini.
She's Gemini, right?
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, Bailey.
Anyway, it's a great episode. I just wanted to say that, like, it's kind of cool to have him, like, that meaning there, but also just, we've been talking a lot about Caster Foe as sort of a foil for Leia's ideals, and so, you know, twins, equal but opposite, yin-yang thing going on, it's fun.
Also, Rob thought it was Caster Foe at first as well, so that that makes us feel better that we also were wrong. And I'm gonna do a little Pablo plug here, because Kate was worried that she was very mean to him, but he was very nice to Claudia Gray, so I'm gonna plug him. This is a quote from Pablo. I can't say it enough. Claudia Gray took a page full of ideas that we passed along and turned it into an amazing novel. Which, thanks, Pablo.
Accurate.
You're right. It is an amazing novel.
This is Pablo Hidalgo for any listeners who did not listen to previous episodes where we talked about him, but he is a member of the Lucasfilm Story Group and very active and opinionated on Star Wars Twitter.
Just like Kate is active and opinionated on Star Wars Twitter and on Pablo. Sure.
Don't at me.
Definitely at her. She wants to argue with you. She's a yes. Cancer.
So
we're
going
just talking about astrological signs.
Yes.
I'm going to scream and cry at you.
Yeah, we are going a little long, but I think this is the nature of wrap-up episodes. We want to make sure we tie up these loose ends. So.
Oh, definitely. I just want to make sure that you don't have to leave. So I figure we can get to our last thoughts on the book. And this is... These next couple questions are kind of things that we asked about Rebel Rising as well, and, like, I want to get in the habit of asking about all the Star Wars media, because, like, or about all the Star Wars, you know, various things that we talk about, because, like, this first one that I want to ask is, what did, like, telling this story through a book add to it? Like, obviously, like, they made the conscious choice to tell the story through a book and not through a TV series or comic books or, you know, a video game or, like, any other media that they could think of. And what do you think that added to it?
We talk a lot about how books are kind of a natural medium for getting at a lot of nuances that other forms of media don't necessarily get at just by their limitations. And I think this book did a really wonderful job of rounding out Leia's character, and especially showing some of her flaws, which we don't really get in the movies, of course, because she's a hero. And honestly, I love that because it made her more human, and it just, I felt like I related to her even more than I already did. And yeah, really excellent job. I just Claudia Gray just nailed Leia's voice, and I'm just, it's just so good. I have nothing but good things to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Chris.
No, go, Kristen.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you didn't catch us talking about some of the literary choices that were made in the first book we read, Rebel Rising, go back and listen to those episodes. That's 1 through 3, I think, of the pod. Mm-hmm. But we obviously flesh this out there. But I think I bring it up because I think Rebel Rising also does something that you can only do in a book form. I mean, Kate obviously talked about how she nailed Leia's voice, but she also like weaves in and out of telling the story. Is it like close second person? Is that, or is it like third person, but she's just using like different points of view? Kate, can you help
me? It's close third.
Okay, it's close third. Thank you. Yeah, I guess it is close third. Now, I took some English classes and I remember nothing, obviously. But she uses close third person point of view if we want to get real nerdy about it. But she goes and, you know, when you start reading the book, you think it's just going to be Leia close third. And then she starts moving on to other characters. And I mean, we touched on this. Oh, excuse me. That was a disgusting belch. And some of the other, in some of the other episodes about this, but that's really something that can only be done in a book form. I feel like if you tried to do that on a movie screen, it gets kind of confusing and isn't as effective. But when you do it in a book, it just nails it. I mean, you get all these different points of views and all of these different motivations and kind of like what people are thinking and when, and how those things can directly conflict with one another or be in harmony with one another when you're not expecting it. And I think that, I mean, it really knocks it out of the park when you put that in book form.
Yeah, I think, you know, that kind of reminds me of a lot of what some of the criticism was for Rogue One, that, you know, obviously it was an ensemble cast and it was an ensemble story, and a lot of people kind of felt that it got a little cluttered up there at the beginning, you know, introducing all these new characters, which, you know, we can debate that back and forth all day. I disagree. But, yeah, that's an excellent point, Keeks.
Yeah, I think, for me, it's absolutely, it's all of that. I mean, the personification of Leia and the internal voice that we get from her is just unbelievable and adds so much depth to the character of Leia, as we've already talked about over the past 5 episodes. But to me, also, the pacing of this book is really incredible because, like, if you think about it, there's so much happens in this book, and there's not a single part of it that feels like either rushed or like you're just like lagging. Like, this book moves at the perfect pace. Every part, even the boring, you know, even the, you know, the exposition, the quote unquote boring parts were really exciting because you wanted to find out more about the characters. And I feel like that's something that's so much harder to do in a movie because there's so many different environments that you have to go through. If you do move through it fast, then it feels rushed and it feels like you get whiplash. But if you don't move through it fast enough, then you just have, you know, the designated part of the movie that you like, you know, take a bathroom break during. But like, I don't know, I feel like the combination of all the different worlds we visited and the way that the book was paced and like how you had the first part in the Senate setting it up and then on Bastatha and then looking into Daxam 4 and then Sabensko and then the very ending in the Senate again and like the ramifications of Leia being Darth Vader's daughter, I feel like you couldn't have done that in a movie. I feel like it just would have been, or even, you know, in a TV show, I feel like it just would have been too back and forth and too much whiplash with not enough connecting it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, this is literally taking place over the course of several months, right? So,
yeah. Cool. Well, that just about wraps it up. I just want to go rapid fire. What's your favorite Easter egg from the book, Kate?
Joff dressing up as an Ubi's bounty hunter, like as Leia did to rescue Han from Jabba the Hutt's palace in Return of the Jedi.
Yes, that was fantastic.
So good.
What was yours, Chris?
Kristen, did you think of one?
No, of course not.
Mine was toward the beginning of the book, Leia hears Castrofo's accent and is reminded of Tarkin's accent and how she, quote-unquote, mocked his accent when she was on the Death Star, which is a throwback to Carrie Fisher's random faux British accent in that scene in A New Hope, which she later said, I have no idea what the fuck I was doing with my voice. It just came out.
Yeah, actually, I do have, like, a pre-Easter egg, which, like, we don't find out that Leia wears jumpsuits until The Force Awakens, and this was obviously, like, written before that, but we get a lot of Leia in jumpsuits in this book, and I'm like, Leia in jumpsuits, yeah, like it.
Nice.
And then that's all That's all she wears in The Force Awakens, and I'm like, modern jumpsuits, great. Here yep. for it.
Also, one other thing that I really... was a tiny thing that I really loved was they talk about we get a Rogus Voss shout out, which is like they're talking about when she's declaring her candidacy for first senator, how she was so heroic on Rogus Voss, which is not from the movies. It is actually from the Marvel comic books, which we're about to start reading. And so I just love when like these extended media reference each other and like ingrain themselves further into the canon and like just create it much more of an intertwined universe as opposed to just standing alone by themselves. That
Carabast.
Makes me happy.
That's right.
Carabast.
You know Carabast is my favorite thing in the world.
I do. Cool. Well, that takes us through Bloodline. It's been 5 episodes. It feels like we could dedicate an entire like podcast series to just deep reading Bloodline. But we are finally through. And thanks to everybody who listened with us. We've enjoyed talking about it. Next week, we mentioned this a little bit last week, so hopefully you've had a chance to line up how to get these comic books, but we're going to dive into the Marvel comic book world of Star Wars and the way that those comic books are really advancing the universe. And if you aren't a comic book person, I actually wasn't before starting to read these, and now I'm obsessed with them. The storytelling is just so great and so different, so we do hope that you'll read them with us. As we said, we're going to be reading Volume 1 of the Marvel Star Wars series that started in 2015, Skywalker Strikes, written by Jason Aaron. We're also going to be reading Volume 1 of the Darth Vader Marvel comic book series, again, the one that started in 2015, not the one that just started like a month ago in 2017. This one written by Kieran Gillen.
Question, because I don't know anything about comic books. I assume that like the back issues are not available at your local comic book store.
They could be. It depends on how big your comic book store is.
Okay.
A lot of comic book stores will have them. Libraries will often have like the volumes. For comic books are labeled weirdly and horribly, and that's like a consistent feature of them throughout time. But basically, Volume 1 of Star Wars consists of issues 1 through 7, and Volume 1 of Darth Vader consists of issues 1 through 6. So, like, those, like, tiny, like, 20, 25-page issues all combine into one volume that is, like, one encompassed story.
Okay.
So,
great.
You can find bound versions of those whole volumes. They should have them at your library. They should have them at comic book stores. I know you can find them online if you have a Marvel Unlimited login. It's a great service because basically any famous Marvel comic you ever wanted to read is available online. I know it's available there. So there's definitely, and you can also get it, buy it online anywhere you can find books. So I definitely encourage people to line that up and read that with us.
Yeah, I was just trying to do a local comic book store plug because those folks can always
they're some of the
coolest people, and you'll go in there and you won't want to leave. That's how I've had every comic book experience, every comic book store experience I've ever had has always been like that. So if this is your first time getting into comics, we would implore you to go.
Just do it.
Go hang out. Maybe not hang out, but like go in there and ask those folks whether or not they have these. And I have a feeling You'll get a little bit more than you asked for, and you might make a cool new buddy. So, just plugging local comic books. I'm from Portland. I have to plug freaking local comic book shops. We still have record stores, for God's sake. So.
I love it.
I couldn't agree more. And then one last note. So we're going to spend 1 week on these comics. They're pretty quick reads, as you will find out. So we want to give you a couple weeks' notice on what our next book will be after that, so you can line it up. And it is going to be Thrawn by Timothy Zahn. This book came out in April of this year, so a few months ago. So we're somewhat current, more so than we were with Bloodline. But I've heard only good things about it. I'm really excited to read it. This is another one that I did not read beforehand. So it's going to be great. Line it up at your local library, buy it at your local indie bookstore. Yeah, get excited.
For sure. I also just want to plug, just because like we tend to talk, or not plug, but I also want to just, maybe the comics will take 2 weeks. We don't know. I don't know how much we're gonna have to say about them, but Chris has read them, so he knows better than we do. But I just want to give us some wiggle room in case we need 2 weeks to two episodes to talk about them.
Legit.
That's fair. That's fair.
Because
We need
we
technically
didn't think we were gonna
we
start
can.
doing wrap-up episodes, and now our wrap-up episodes are our longest episodes. So, just saying. Just giving us a
All
little
right,
wiggle room
and
and you more time to get Thrawn is all I'm saying. And if you didn't know, I'm obsessed with Thrawn, so I am so excited for this book after we're done the comics. So.
Yes, it's going to be great.
So.
Cool. Well, that is it. Thank you so much for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher. We have, as I've said before, are just truly overwhelmed by people's response to some of our latest episodes, the interactions we've gotten on Twitter at Book Wars Pod. Please keep it coming. We love interacting with you. We would love to see your reviews, see what you like about the show. If there's anything you don't like about the show, hit us up. And we'll, make sure that everybody's enjoying it, because at the end of the day, it's Star Wars and we all just want to have fun.
That's right.
So for Kate and Kristen, I'm Chris, and we will talk to you next week.
Woo.
Oh, I gotta pee so bad. Okay, hang on. I'll be right back, guys.
Kate, Jesus Christ.